Hanover Square Press and Harper Audio present John Adams Under Fire, The Founding Fathers Fight for Justice in the Boston Massacre Murder Trial by Dan Abrams and David Fisher. Read by Dan Abrams and Roger Wayne. This is Dan Abrams. Introduction. I have long advocated for cameras in courtrooms, making the argument that, like sunlight, they can be the best disinfectants. In particularly sensitive trials, where the outcome could inflame a community, it can be incredibly valuable for the public to see for themselves the arguments and witnesses in a trial, even if they can't make it to the courtroom. Closely observing the proceedings can help people better understand how jurors reached a verdict, even one they find repulsive. That principle in its 1770 form could not have been more apt in what became known as the Boston Massacre Trials. Revolution was in the air, and the events of March 5, 1770 could have easily become the trigger to set off a war years before 1776. Instead, rather than turning to violence, a small courtroom served as a public theater for the battle. And because that battle was conducted conscientiously and was generally viewed as fair and proper, violence was averted, at least temporarily. A relatively new rule of law prevailed and set a standard for 250 years of jurisprudence to follow. To truly understand how monumental an accomplishment that was, it is essential not just to understand the colonists' gripes with British oppression and arrogance, as we do in Chapter 1, but to also comprehend the Crown's mindset coming into 1770. The previous century had seen four devastating world wars between England and France, fought largely in North America. From 1689 to 1713, there were only 5 years of peace between what became known as King William's War and Queen Anne's War. In both, Massachusetts played a leading role among the colonies. Then what began as a war with Spain in 1739, in which Boston residents played a large role, morphed into a larger fight with the French again in King George's War, concluding in 1748. Then, just 6 years later, skirmishes in the Ohio Valley broke out over control of the area west of the Appalachian Mountains, in what would become the greatest of the wars, eventually to be known as the Seven Years' War. The British finally prevailed again 9 hard years later, and by the time the Treaty of Paris was signed in 1763, had expanded their footprint significantly through North America. But the victory led to a whole host of new challenges, ranging from massive war debt to administration of the new territories to how they would fit into the now larger British Empire's mosaic of possessions. The war-weary British felt they had fought long and hard for the colonies, and while colonists had battled alongside them, including Lieutenant Colonel George Washington, they should now share in the financial and practical burdens. By 1770, the British were frustrated with what they felt were their freeloading, ungrateful subjects. With tension reaching a boiling point, it became paramount to ensure this legal process was deemed to be just. So maintaining a written record was not just significant for historical purposes, but also so those who could not attend the trial would be able to review the details of the proceedings. In our first book, Lincoln's Last Trial, the murder trial that propelled him to the presidency, we discussed how unusual it was in 1859 to have an entire trial transcribed. But at least there, scribe Robert Hitt had done so for a handful of other trials, and even during the
sample complete. Ready to continue?